Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 56 of Her, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, and her life. Oh boy, today we're going to be talking about what? An emotionally unavailable partner? Never. Yeah, right. Reality blast. But before we get into this wonderful segment, I want to make sure you know the episode is made possible by Prevention, which is partnered with Premier Protein to kick off their Spread the Health Healthy Habits Challenge with 6 monthly blogs and videos to show you how simple it can be to implement real lasting change. You'll love the topics, including move, nourish, grow, relax, and balance. Yeah, we want all of that. So run on over to prevention.com/content/spreadthehealth. Hashtag spread the health. Oh boy. And while you're at it, after this episode, don't you dare forget to run on over to iTunes and please rate the podcast and review us. Because guess what? Yeah, I read these things. Love it, love it, love it. Want to hear your feedback. It's always good. All right, it's time for Her.
Her. The podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind.
Her body.
Her life.
It's all about her.
Is your partner emotionally unavailable? Yeah, right. Big, huge yeah for so many of you out there. Well, we have the author of a very awesome book, If We're Together, Why Do I Feel So Alone? How to Build Intimacy with an Emotionally Unavailable Partner. Dr. Holly Parker is a faculty member in the Department of Psychology at Harvard University and clinical psychologist at the Edith Norse Rogers Memorial Veterans Hospital. Gosh, I said it right this time. Okay, and what we're going to be doing here is having a little bit fun, trying to understand, is it humanly possible to be able to, well, make it work with an emotionally unavailable partner? Dr. Parker, welcome to the Her Podcast.
Oh, it is such a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on your show. It's a real honor, and I hope that you and your listeners are having a beautiful day.
Well, they are if they could make sure that their emotionally unavailable partner is doing it right along with them. Why'd you write this book?
It's a great question. You know, I am a big, big believer that, you know, when we think about the power of relationships, right? I mean, I'd invite your listeners to even think about the moments in their lives when, you know, they were on top of the world, when life felt just, you know, it's most meaningful, when they were at their happiest, their most joyful. And on the flip side of that, those moments when they're feeling deeply lonely, despairing, sad, scared, I'm willing to bet that in the vast majority of both of those moments, they revolved around relationships. And when relationship with a partner is going beautifully, it makes a massive difference in people's quality of life. And when it's not, it plays a role in immense, overwhelming pain. And I really wanted to do something about that. I wanted to speak to that to help people remedy their relationship, because a lot of the time we can feel like we're helpless in a relationship, like we're in a boat on a river and we have no control. And so I wanted to people to feel more empowered and know that no matter what, there's something that they can do, whether it's to leave a relationship or if they try to make it work, to try to build a connection.
I love it. And your other work has also, you know, shown this. You have these books, and that is When Reality Bites, How Denial Helps and What to Do When It Hurts. Ah, so lovely. And then sort of a guided tour through the benefits and the pitfalls of denial. And then, of course, our current book, which is all about this issue of emotional availability. What is emotional availability?
Emotional availability is the both the ability and the willingness to cultivate and to nurture and maintain an emotional bond with another person. Emotional availability is the is the willingness to participate in a relationship that is healthy, that is mutually gratifying and fulfilling for both people.
Okay, excellent. Okay, so who's mostly emotionally unavailable? I think the sort of standing stereotype out there is it's a guy.
I really love that you brought that up, right? Because we have so many ideas in our society, in our culture, right, about how men are and how women are, and we have these ideas that women are somehow much more caring about relationships, that they are more emotionally attuned, and that men just aren't quite as invested, that they aren't as emotionally attuned. We even have the idea, right, that men and women, they're just like night and day and very different. And in fact, the science actually shows that that's not the case, that men and women are far more similar than different, and that the stereotypes we have about gender actually box and underserve both men and women, and that in fact, research reveals that men are likely to say, I love you, before women do. They're likely to think about saying, I love you, in a relationship before women do. That they, in terms of what they're looking for, men and women have many of the same needs and desires. So men are every bit as capable as being just as emotionally available as a woman, and women are just as capable as being emotionally unavailable as an unavailable man is. So in terms
How
of gender, they're very equal. Yes.
Well, I think it's really important for women to hear that out there in her podcast land, because her podcasts try to get rid of these myths and to really rectify it with updated research, updated thinking by experts like yourself. And so that's really important, because I think you know it and I know it. We know it's a lot of women who are, and I quote, emotionally unavailable. And, this is no big historic milestone here. I mean, they're out there, and so are men. So there you have it. But you talk about unavailable personality types. Mm-hmm. Let's go through a few of those. There's one, the critic. Mm-hmm. Who's the critic?
Yeah, these types, one thing I'll invite your listeners to think about when they think about these types is I really frame them as various kinds of challenges that people can really experience when it comes to availability. And so for any type, it's not so much that they are in these kind of little boxes, right? We humans, we are complex. We definitely don't fit into boxes. And we actually have a lot more complexity to us and dimensionality to us. And so I invite people to think about all of these types as really challenges that people can struggle with when it comes to availability to a greater or lesser degree. And so, for example, like if we take the critic, the critic is really somebody who it's like the flip side of seeing the world through rose-colored glasses. This is someone who has a dark filter, and it feels like no matter what you do in the relationship, like it's like you can't win for trying. This is someone that fault finds, that nitpicks, that always sees the downside, and it feels like you can never do anything right. And this is someone where, to a greater or lesser degree, right? So somebody who's a critic can, be critical, but maybe not about, everything, right? Or this is somebody who can be ruthlessly critical and who can be very hurtful in the kinds of critical comments that they make. But the real essence of it is somebody who is a chronic fault finder.
Excellent. Okay. Yeah. So what about the next bad guy? Okay. So we've got the critic, the sponge. Yeah. Who the heck is the sponge?
The sponge is someone who they're in a really difficult spot because the sponge is somebody who relies on their partner to fill a void in themselves, in their lives. This is somebody who really relies on the relationship for his or her happiness. Right? So oftentimes, you know, there's a great quote I love that's, happiness is an inside job. This is somebody who, for them, the happiness hinges on the relationship. It hinges on validation from the partner. And the flip side of that, though, is that the sponge desperately wants this connection and can never get enough validation. But the challenge is that it can feel like filling a black hole because they have a hard time trusting that their partner really loves them, right? So if they're, for example, if their partner makes them dinner and, you know, sets out this just lovely spread for them, they might think, okay, so when is the shoe going to drop? When is something going to go wrong? Like, it's so hard because they feel this sense of emptiness. They feel this sense of purposelessness. It's really hard, even though they want that love, to be able to accept it. So that's essentially what the sponge really struggles with.
Ah, okay. So we got the critic, the sponge, and the what? The iceberg.
Yes.
And this is a glacier-like person.
Yes. The iceberg is somebody who probably a lot like what they sound like. This is somebody who tends to be very dismissive of relationships. They tend to be dismissive of emotional closeness and connection. Someone who you know, is very unlikely to be a warm source of support for his or her partner, is also very unlikely to reach out for support from a partner. And this is somebody where, you know, when you're with him or her, it can feel almost like there's this indifference, you know, that you might doubt how important you are to the person. You could feel very alone with this person, and almost like, you know, they're minimizing the importance of the relationship. So you wonder how valuable you really are.
Interesting. Okay. We got the glacier. That's why I like to call that one.
Yeah.
The emotional silencer.
Yeah.
That sounds like a gun.
Yes, it is, actually. And that gun can be internal, or the emotional silencer can be, that gun can be external. So the emotional silencer is someone who feels either they can't connect with their feelings, or they don't want to, and really try to push their own feelings away. And so they're probably very unlikely to either be able to talk about their feelings or to want to talk about them, right? So they'll kind of, you know, be more likely to evade them. They also may be very uncomfortable with actually talking to their partner about their partner's feelings, right? So this is someone who is more apt to shut down, you know, who feels more comfortable talking in more of an intellectualized space, someone who feels more comfortable talking about their thoughts or facts rather than delving into their feelings. So that's really what the emotional silencer is like. Yeah.
Okay. And then we got the defender.
Yes.
It sounds like a really bad sitcom or some kind of drama series. On Hulu or
yeah,
Netflix.
That's right. Yeah. You've got The Equalizer and now The Defender.
I
right?
know, totally.
The defender is someone who literally puts up a shield to a threat. That threat can be real. That threat can be imagined. The defender is, you know, someone who, you know, when they encounter a threat. So, for example, we talk about real or imagined. Let's say that we criticize our partner, right? Or we tell our partner what they're not doing right. That could be, you know, very threatening for someone. And, you know, it actually often is. And so what happens is the defender is more likely to, you know, put up that shield and either go back on the attack or withdraw. But it doesn't have to be an actual threat, right? So it could be something that's imagined. If the defender is concerned that maybe we're going to be disappointed, or imagines that maybe we're judging him or her when we're not, they could also either go on the attack and blame, criticize, you know, put fault, or on the flip side say, well, it wasn't my fault, right? I didn't do anything wrong, or just really emotionally withdraw. And when people go on the defensive, they tend to do one of those things, either to attack back or to disengage. And the defender represents someone who tends to fall into that pattern.
Well, you know, let me ask you maybe perhaps a silly question here. So two people meet. You haven't heard it yet. No.
Try me. I'm ready.
Yeah, brace yourself. So you meet someone and, you know, dopamine's flowing and, you know, you got all your reward centers, you know, lighting up and whatever. And you fall in love with this person and, you know, you make it much more permanent one way or the other. Nowadays, I have to be so loose about this. You know, you live with each other. You may or may not tie the knot, whatever. Mm-hmm. But is it really obvious right off the bat that someone's emotionally unavailable? Or do people who are emotionally unavailable put on a little act in the beginning because they're feeling the dopamine rush? And then within a certain period of time, it becomes pretty clear that they ain't available, that was more of an act than anything else. And I don't mean malicious or anything, because they really want to be with you, but they're struggling and they're probably trying really, really, really hard to be what you want them to be. But I think a lot of people are fooled. So if that's true, how do you check out the red flags and really start to realize what you're getting your little behind into here?
It's a magnificent question. So one thing that's actually really fascinating about relationships when we think about them in the long term is more recent research has actually shown that when we think about the life course of a relationship, the idea of kind of couples being in that kind of initial new phase that tends to decline over time, that actually doesn't, that doesn't have to happen. What we think of as the honeymoon phase can be the honeymoon lifetime. That the flip side is also true, that people in relationships, when we look at them over time, most of the past research that looked at the life course of relationships actually made the mistake of lumping all kinds of relationships together. And just as humans, as individuals, we don't develop along the same trajectory. What research has actually found is that now we're seeing that relationships don't develop along the same trajectory either. And so you see some couples where they start off just, it's like, yeah, bright and shiny, right? Everything is going beautifully. And it tends to be pretty stable, and it tends to stay that way. And couples do very well. And in fact, even decades later, their brains respond to their partner like the brains of people who are newly in love. But then you have people who are in these other, trajectories, people who are moderately happy, right, who do well, but they show a kind of, gradual, decline that can happen. And then people actually who show low levels of happiness and satisfaction from the beginning. So it definitely is something that people can see, right off the bat. It's something that can also hide a little bit more in plain sight and that people may not see over time. And in both cases, people can find themselves with an emotionally unavailable partner, even if that partner is unavailable from the beginning. In some ways, because, as a relationship is, as people are spending more time together, as you aptly noted, right, kind of before people get to the point when they're living together, even in a relationship that's going to struggle, and struggle greatly, right, with someone who's unavailable from the beginning, it may be harder to see that because you're spending these thin slices of time with someone. And also, it may be that for the person who's unavailable, their alarm, their emotional alert to be afraid and to back away may not actually show up right away, because they aren't as emotionally invested yet, right? So a relationship gets scarier as people develop more feelings for each other. They become more vulnerable. As they spend more time together, it's possible to see these different ways in which a partner may not be able to connect. And also, you know, I mean, as humans, we can be good at telling ourselves stories. We can be good at dismissing challenges that could be there and assume, well, you know, this is nothing, right? This is going to get better. Or, you know, well, maybe this is just something that that they're struggling with now, right? So, for example, if we take the iceberg, somebody who may seem kind of aloof, that actually might seem attractive to somebody, right? They may say, oh, well, they seem really casual. You know, they're not pressuring me to get serious. I kind of like this. But then after time, when they develop more feelings and the person continues to stay that way, now they're in this and they have feelings
that they're invested. Well, now that you've said that, I want to segue to sort of our final piece here.
Sure.
And that is the whole issue of if you're in a, and I quote, broken relationship, one where, you know, you've got two people who don't, well, at least one for sure, but potentially two who are not happy campers.
Sure.
And this emotional unavailability is rearing its ugly head. Mm-hmm. The question is, A, is it ever too late? Can even the most broken relationship be reinvigorated, heal, and evolve? Number two, when do we know when to end it? You know, when we really say, okay, this is just simply not working at all.
Right. It's such an important issue to consider. Number one, is it ever too late? As long as you have two people who, you know, who are still invested in trying to, who still kind of want to be in the game, so to speak. You know, they haven't walked off the field yet. They're still at least wanting to, you know, stick things out and see what happens, and they're not done yet. There is a possibility for things to turn around because a relationship, and I love talking with people about this, because often we think about only one side of a relationship. A relationship is a living system. And you have two people in it. And when one person does something different, that it doesn't guarantee that the other person is going to do something different. But it's like a bike in its gears. When we change one part of the system, we are highly likely for the other part to change. And in fact, sometimes two people can struggle, and one or both people can be unavailable because of dynamics that are happening in the relationship, right? It's not always what one person brings with them. And so to the degree that people are willing to make a change, to the degree that even one person is willing to do something different within themselves and how they are in the relationship, there is the possibility for, you know, relationships that are deeply disconnected to turn around. That said, as someone who is passionate about relationships, one of the things I tell people is my goal is not necessarily to keep you together. And, you know, I definitely believe that sometimes the best ending for a couple is for them to part ways. If the relationship is not going to turn around, and when to do that, how to know, I think that is a very private and personal decision for each person to think about, because they're the ones who are going to live with that decision. However, there are questions that I invite people to think about to help them determine when, you know, kind of what it is that they're looking for and, you know, when they might want to stay, when they might want to leave. So questions to think about, for example, would be, is this a challenge that has always been there in our relationship? Or is this something that is new? In other words, do we have a pretty good period of being able to be connected with each other and then something has shifted? Because that shows potential in the couple for something to be different. Or has it always been there? Were there, if a couple is married, for example, were there doubts going into the marriage? You know, there's research indicating that can be important, right? Like, were there doubts?
Right.
The other thing would be thinking ahead, right? What is it that I need to remain in this relationship? What are the minimal things that I would need to see to feel like I can really put both feet in this relationship and to be very specific.
I call those the deal breakers.
That's right.
Those are deal breakers.
That's
right. It's like, you know, if you suddenly, you know, took up drugs. Okay. Mm-hmm. Deal breaker. And we don't do drugs. That's not happening. No, no, no. And, you know, something's going to have to be, mm-hmm. you know, reversed here, or this relationship
right.
is for naught.
That's right.
Or it could be lots of, it could be philandering, you know, I mean, having affairs or, you know, whatever. Sort of amazing how many relationships sort of endure despite the fact that all these weird things go on. They just sort of, you know, keep on trucking along for whatever reason. But I think a lot of men and women need to get in touch with deal breakers. What is a deal breaker? I'm, for instance, for myself, mm-hmm. No matter how much I would love someone or back and forth, you know, as a friend, or even as a partner, you know, certainly I don't have that with my husband. But I was just thinking, if I was out there, if someone was a cigarette smoker, that's mm-hmm. a deal breaker for me. Mm-hmm. I can't do that. I, you know, I'm a physician.
Right.
I'm, you know, a whole litany of 900,000 reasons why that's all wrong. It just doesn't work for me. There, it's non-judgmental. It's data driven. And,
yeah.
you know, I think you're also saying there's a point at which, you know, the emotional involvement and investment mm-hmm. Then get superseded by some deal breaker that
you
just says, you know, it's not going to happen. You just can't do it anymore.
Yeah, you know, and I think that also goes to, you know, as you said, right, it needs to be data driven, you know, and I think a lot of times what people do is they don't really think about what it is that they're looking for in a partner. It's like they meet someone. In fact, there's even research showing that, like, kind of people can find themselves, you know, not deciding to be in a relationship, but more sliding into a relationship and not really thinking about, okay, what is it that I am looking for? Both, you know, what are my deal breakers? I invite people to think about, what are my must-haves? You know, what they have to have. What are my would like to haves, right? So to kind of be really clear about that, and to think about, so in what way am I ignoring what my deal breakers are and trying to hold on to this relationship? And if people can think about what they want, and also, you know, people can have really complex reasons for why they stay in a relationship. I invite people to think about what it is that you hope for by staying in the relationship. What are you afraid of if you stay in this relationship? On the flip side of that, what are you afraid of if you leave? What do you hope for if you leave? What keeps you from walking away? What keeps you from kind of really being able to put both feet into this relationship? And for people to take a good, honest look, rather than wishing their partner were different, you know, I kind of give the example of people treating their partner like a pie that has a few good slices, right? But then also slices that they really don't want and that they're not happy with. And so people can sometimes find themselves holding on to a relationship that fundamentally isn't working for them, but they don't want to acknowledge it because they see these good things and they try to separate their partner off into these pieces. If we can really step back and look at things from a 360 point of view, both our relationship and our partner, then we can see more clearly what it is that we need and what we want.
Oh, I love it. That's beautifully said, because I think that, you know, as a final thought, so many men and women really don't come to grips with what they really absolutely need in a relationship.
Right.
They're too busy, especially women, pleasing the other person. They're too fearful of confrontation.
Yeah.
Even if it's just a, hey, can we sit down over coffee and go over this issue that really seems to be causing a lot of tension? I think communication is lacking, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And I know in your clinical practice, you know, you deal with so much of this, and you've been working with people with a whole array of issues, everything from trauma, mood, anxiety, to these kinds of issues. And so that's why I'm really making certain that everyone out there run on over and grab If We're Together, Why Do I Feel So Alone? How to Build Intimacy with an Emotionally Unavailable Partner. This is an absolutely terrific book. And if you've loved listening to this podcast with Dr. Holly Parker, who is the author, then you're really going to get into this book because it is superb. It really hits on so many of these issues, and it helps guide you, almost like Dr. Parker was right there helping you one-on-one with thinking through your own relationships, telling your true truth, and not denying what the reality is. Speaking of which, she is the author of another book. Did you like that one? When
that
Reality Bites. Damn, that was smooth. When Reality Bites, How Denial Helps and What to Do When It Hurts. And so I think that Dr. Parker has really devoted herself to cutting down and drilling down to some of the vital issues that occur when people try to interrelate with one another and run into all of these what appear to be, you know, mountainous speed bumps. Turns out there is a way to get through this. What was it Robert Frost once said, the great poet? He said, the only way out of this is through this. And I think that Dr. Parker does an outstanding job of showing all of us, her readers, her listeners, how to get through this. Holly, thank you so much for being on the Her podcast. It's been wonderful. All right, everyone out there, remember to catch every episode of Her. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or run on over to our show page at RadioMD.com. And while you're at it, come on, we want to have a rate and a review on iTunes because we want to hear from you. Always want to hear from you, and I read these things because they're good. So bring it on down to me. I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Follow me on Twitter at PamPeekMD. And you can also check out our Her Show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Thanks for listening, and stay well.